And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
You buy this for $39.99? Guess what, folks? You take the L away. You put a W there, baby. You're a winner, man. You're the real deal. You're picking up chicks. Let me tell you something. You buy this set at $39.99, baby, you're the cock of the walk, man. You walk into the bar and you just find the hottest chick and you go, you, me, guess what? She says, why would I go out with you? Because I bought the deal on Wild West Deals for $39.99, that's why. She says, can I go home with you? That's how simple it is. That's how it works. That's what this set brings to the table. Because you know what she sees? She sees a man who knows what he wants. She sees a man who says, good deals don't get by me, baby. I move. I act. I act quick. I act now. I go to wildwestdeals.com. Boom. That's why you're hanging with chicks all night long. That's why you got guys like Michael Jordan calling you wanting to hang out with you, baby. Because you bought it for
$39.99. Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Wednesday, May 8th, 2024. I'm J.E. Skeets here in the Classic Factory, and alongside me, as always, Tass Mellis.
We call them cold opens, usually because they're good. I don't know if cold means good or bad with that one. I'm not sure how to feel about that.
Next to him, it's the bearded one, a top shot hot boy, Trey Kirby.
Ayo!
Ayo! And over yonder, making the magic happen, super producer, J.D.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. That was a hot open. We got to get that guy selling our fans on the show. Subscribe, Mr. Wild West Deal Man.
I'm buying a box of cards.
Yeah.
I want to hang out with Michael Jordan.
Exactly. Hello to everyone joining us live on YouTube right now. Take a second, hit the like button, subscribe. Podcast listeners, leave your boys a five-star rating and review. We might have some five-star Friday fun on this week's Drop Podcast. A bunch of news on today's pod. Rudy Gobert, we got a Jamal Murray update. Got an unfortunate Mitchell Robinson update. We'll get into all that, but we had some games on last night. They were blowouts. Nearly had identical scores when you look at them. But let's start with the second game. Oklahoma City, still unbeaten here in the 2024 NBA playoffs. They swept the Pelicans in the first round, and then they beat the Mavericks 117-95 in game one of this second round series. Where do you want to start in this one? Thunder side of things or the Mavericks struggling?
Well, we'll start with the Thunder side of things, I would say, because this one was far less of a blowout than that first one, than that Cavs Celtics one, because this one was close in the third quarter when Jalen Williams started to get going, because he didn't hit a bucket in the first half at all. He didn't hit one from the floor, and I thought OKC wanted it just a little more. They looked a lot better than they did in game one versus the Pelicans in round one. They looked like a complete team, and I thought the Mavs looked a tiny bit flat, and I think that's what got Jalen Williams going. There was a missed shot early in the third quarter that he missed, and then he was able to get the offensive rebound because Luka just kind of looked flat. The legs looked a little dead on that offensive rebound, so he gets it. He hits a shot, and then from there, he had that magical fourth quarter run where he had four buckets on four consecutive possessions. That was pretty cool to watch, and him and Shea celebrating together after that because they were just like, this is our team, we're feeling good again. They looked way better than I thought they did in game one of the Clippers series. Jalen Williams also had that incredible layup in the top, from the top right corner of the basket. That
really
was
high.
That was wild. It was a contested lay-in. He hits it from the top right corner. We need to do a sports science on that. I think there's a lot of plays we'll get to in this one where you can look at this. Maybe that dude who does the cold open can do a sports science for us, because there's like the physics in this game. There was a lot of wild ones. And then, I mean, to go on with Jalen Williams, Shea was just feeling it in that third quarter when he hit those two step-back threes, that guy who doesn't usually hit three, high-fiving Mark Dagnott, his coach. That usually doesn't happen either, but that's his boy, as he said last week when he won Coach of the Year, when they got their bigger role, when Shea got his point guard spot on this team. That's when Dagnott got his spot. So really, we can get to all the support guys who were really good in this game. But I thought those two dudes were great. And again, I thought OKC was just on a little bit more. The offensive rebound battle was important, and it helped turn Jalen Williams' game around. Those were too many boards that the Mavs allowed, 16 to 11 in the offensive rebound department. OKC won it. Maybe it's home court, but they also just felt really good.
Yeah, the Thunder led by 9 points at halftime, so it was close. But they pulled away there late in the third quarter after the Mavericks had made a run to make it a one-point game, because I don't know if Kyrie Irving started cooking, but he was pulling out the ingredients. He was getting ready to cook, but that's when OKC responded with scoring on their next six possessions.
Yeah.
Five of them three-pointers, and it felt like everybody out there was hitting one, and that got the lead back to double digits, and they sort of, you know, stiff-armed them there in the fourth quarter. But yeah, you had SGA early doing work in the third, and then Jalen Williams in the fourth sort of shutting the door on Dallas.
Yeah, it was as simple as sitting Josh Giddey down for the Thunder. As soon as he went out, the Thunder went on massive runs in this game. In the first quarter, as soon as he sits down, 5-0. Second quarter, as soon as he sits down, 16-5 run for the Thunder. Also had a 14-6 run in the second as well. Then that big third quarter run, as soon as Giddey goes to the bench, 22-8 for the Thunder. Fourth quarter, it happened again. 17-2 run as soon as Giddey sat down. The defense was too easy for the Mavericks without Giddey out there. Once he went to the bench, usually for Isaiah Joe, there was so much shooting for the Thunder that they were able to get really, really good looks and kind of neutralize what Daniel Gafford had been bringing to the game. The Thunder stars were just better than the Mavericks stars in this one. I guess, 47 combined points for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Jalen Williams, but most of those came in the fourth for Jalen, whereas Shai just went to the free throw line. It was a parade for this guy in the first half. That was honestly a little bit of an unfair whistle, I thought, for the Mavericks. At one point, Derek Jones Jr. gets kicked in the nuts, and still Shai Gilgeous-Alexander shoots free throws? That didn't make any sense to me. But he took a lot of free throws. He was in rhythm. And then Jalen Williams came alive in the fourth quarter. At one point, Ian Eagle said it sounds like the Arsenio Hall show in here, which was a perfect reference because Grant Hill's an old guy too.
Everybody barking. Yeah, because he hit the two threes. He had that crazy scoop layup that you were talking about.
Gafford blocked it in the first half.
Yeah.
Put it off the glass. So he said, I got to go higher.
Got to go higher. And then he had the baseline dunk sort of finish like his own personal run there, and everybody barking away.
It is true that the officiating was strange. It looked like a different sport than if you were watching Minnesota-Denver. They were allowing everything to go in that game. Mm-hmm. While in this one, they were whistling everything. It was interesting. The Shai kicks his leg up. He does get hit on his shooting hand, so he goes to the free throw line for that. But he did give a light kick to Derek Jones' testicles, and that's why Derek Jones bent over immediately. So he got a technical, but he still went to the free throw line. So
technical.
Yeah. So I do understand why people were upset that, wow, Shai is going to the line. Like, they were calling every bump, really, when he was getting into the lane and everything that just shook him a little bit. He went to the free throw line 13 times. They were calling a lot of free throws. Luka as well, getting to the free throw line plenty. So I don't think you could just say that as a Dallas fan. OKC went to the line too many times. But it did look like a different sport, honestly, out there. They were calling everything. Ben Taylor, Tony Brothers, those guys, in this arena, they were calling it all, really. Just to comment on Luka, though, he was off. I did mention where he just looked flat and wasn't able to go get a rebound. He looked off on the offensive end as well. Lou Dort, doing his part, but Luka just looked, because he is unstoppable, he just looked off. I mean, he's
been off.
Yeah, he's off, but sometimes, I mean, this was way more off. Like, he has bad games and then good games in the playoffs, and this one was just not feeling it.
Well, yeah. Part of that, probably this lingering knee issue, no doubt.
Yeah.
The other part, Lou Dort, all over you. I mean, he had a bad game, Luka. 6-19. He only scored 19 points, which is like nothing for this guy, obviously. I think it's been a long time since he's had under 20 points in a playoff game. And those five turnovers that he had in the game, too, three of them were just like bad, like lob attempts that he was sort of just chucking at the rim and hoping one of his guys was going to come down with it. And then the other two were mainly because of Lou Dort, poking it out and hitting the floor and stuff like that. But yeah, he is. I would not ever want to step into the Dortcher chamber. I definitely wouldn't want to when I had a bum knee, and it seems to be affecting him both offensively and then defensively as well. You said, I mean, there's very little hustle from him on the glass or definitely on defense. He looks like it's having an effect on him. He said after the game, TK, like, I don't think it's going to get better.
No.
Maybe in the offseason it will. But
they play every other day now, too.
That's right.
So that's bad. But the Mavs defense looked the best when Giddey was on the court. And Daniel Gafford was guarding Giddey the entire time. They went on that nice run in the third quarter, and then Oklahoma City hit back right away. A great response from them to, I don't know, did Dallas end up tying it in the third quarter? They at least got it really close, and then it was like instantly a huge run for the Thunder. Super impressive. The Gafford thing to me is such a double-edged sword. He had a nice game, you know?
Yeah. Played too hard.
He played hard, but too much Gafford.
Yes.
Too much Gafford. Yeah, it's like you're playing into the Thunder's hands. That's the game plan. Every time they run a pick and roll, they're going to send two at Luka. He drops it off. Gafford made some nice plays, but only 5 for 12 from the field. He was taking a lot of wild layups over three guys. And honestly, you want Gafford shooting if you're the Thunder. That's the entire point. So I think a little bit more Luka ISO, a little bit more Kyrie ISO. Don't give him a chance to double team. Just go out there and cook. We'll see if Luka can do it. I thought he got good shots. He just missed. I mean, Dort was in his drawers, absolutely, but Luka can score on this guy. It's just a matter of being healthy enough to do it and hitting some shots. He wasn't able to do it last night, and he hasn't had a great game yet in these playoffs, I don't think.
No,
yeah,
really.
I wouldn't call him dead, though, because it definitely looks like, yes, his legs look dead, his knees look dead, but you look in the first round, and he did have some duds. He had a 7 of 25, and then he followed up with a decent couple games, you know, a 14 of 26 in there, a great 29-point game, like there a great 35-point game. There is a dud, but then it's followed by a decent one. So I don't think he's dead by any means. Yeah,
he has to hit some three-pointers here at some point, though. He was 1 of 8 in this game. He's down to 22.7% from deep in the playoffs. He's 5 of 35 over his last four games. And you go back and watch them, which I did this morning, you know, they're always contesting. There's always somebody lunging at him, be it a Dort, SGA, you know, Wallace at times even on the switch. But they're makeable ones. I'm with you. He seemed to be missing in the exact same spot every time, and a part of that, I do think it's like they look flat because he probably doesn't have that sort of lift or the bounce there because of maybe the knee. I mean, I don't want to make excuses for him because the defense is awesome. It's elite from OKC, but there's definitely something wrong with him physically.
He literally says it every time anybody asks him about it. He said it to Jared Greenberg. My knees don't feel good. Now, maybe that's a little gamesmanship to say, hey, okay, see, I don't feel good. Maybe give me some space out there. But he's also, you know, he does that throughout the entire season. There's lots of games where he limps up and he fights through it. And I wouldn't say that he's dead. He did make some bad passes, like that one you said to Chet Holmgren. It was a pass to Gafford. Aaron Wiggins came and broke it up because it was just a bad pass. But he also had, there's the one guy who's guarding him was fighting extremely hard. And Lu Dort, there was a pass from Kyrie coming to Luka. And Lu Dort just said, I got this, 30 feet away. He got in the way and blocked it. And I love this scheme of Lu Dort. I don't know if it's a purposeful kickball, but it's a kickball you can't call a kickball because Lu Dort does a little, Luka does a little crossover to Lu Dort, and he knows it's coming, so he kicks his leg out and hits his leg. Can't call it because it hits your kind of your shin area. It hits his shin, and he gets down and goes and gets it. He dove to the floor to go get it.
That was the one that went the other way for a Jalen Williams dub,
A kickball that wasn't a kickball. It's an interesting one.
Oh, man. That one gets everybody going at the pickup runs when that happens. Well, it's a kickball. Well, I didn't mean to kick it. He threw it off my leg.
Yeah. See, it doesn't hit a foot, so it's technically not a kick.
It's true.
But it's a kick. So a smart move there by Lu Dort.
Luka, just to remind you, too, was a great three-point shooter during the regular season. I mean, he shot 38% from three on very high volume. We're talking like 10 three-point attempts per game. So he can't get one to drop. In fact, he got one to drop early in this game. Did you see his reaction?
Yeah.
This was early in the game. It was like the first couple minutes. I think it was his second three-point attempt. And even then, he's like, oh, God, I hit one. And you're like, oh, okay, here we go. But then didn't hit one from there. He is really struggling. Let's talk about the Thunder reserves, though. You slipped it in there, TK, when you talked about Giddey going to the bench and these runs happening for OKC. The reserves accounted for 36% of the Thunder's points last night because you had Aaron Wiggins everywhere on that floor, chipping in 16 points. Isaiah Joe, where did you come from? Where did you go? He hit two threes. Wallace hit two threes while doing his, like, you know, 94 feet of defense on a Kyrie or whoever the ball handler was. And even the other Jalen Williams. 5 of 7, 9 boards, 2 assists. Like, what a luxury for Dagnon to have the ability to go to any of these guys. I mean, really, outside of Giddey, who even had moments when he was out there, nobody played poorly.
Well, Gordon.
For all cases. Gordon, yeah, well, Gordon Hayward nice did his thing. Yeah, he did his thing.
Running.
That's right. He almost scored on a tip.
That was close,
the
man.
The streak almost ended.
He's going to get one.
But, you know, I'm talking about the main players, I guess. Everybody contributing here for OKC.
Yeah, they were incredible. They completely outplayed the Mavs bench. Tim Hardaway Jr., he was back. Couldn't really make a shot. Derek Lively looked a little out of his element in this one. Gafford was certainly the better big man. Obviously, no Maxi Kleber. Green played okay, I thought. They're going to need a little bit more from him because he brings a little athleticism to the table. But yeah, basically as soon as Giddy sat down, the Thunder took off. And it just kept happening and happening. This game was such a blowout that like the entire second half, I was just thinking, if you play for the Thunder, either your last name starts with a W or you've got a sick, very cool name. Cason Wallace, Aaron Wiggins, Kenrich Williams, Jalen Williams, Jalen Williams. And then you got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Chet Holmgren, Lou Dort. Isaiah Joe. The W's and the cool names.
That's great.
Yeah.
And then you've got Gordon.
Then you got straight up Gordon Hayward. Yeah.
That's why they
so
cut.
That's what I was thinking the fourth quarter of this game.
Well, they did pull away. Look, the Maverick, maybe Jason Kidd was thinking about that too. He waved the white flag with like, it was like 5 minutes to go. Yeah. I know they were down huge and your guys banged up and like you got to play in two nights. So probably the right decision, but a little weird. It's weird when you see 5 minutes left to like, all right, bring in the subs. We're waving the white flag here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder if they cut Lugens Dort's name to Lou Dort just to make it a little extra cooler. He's always gone by Lou Dort. That's just a stupid joke. I do think Aaron Wiggins was awesome. I always think that Aaron Wiggins is probably the best player of all those players coming off the bench and just what he does. Obviously, he was splashing threes, but he was back. He backdoored Luka one time for a cut.
He's everywhere. Yeah, he never stops moving.
Got a steal on a lob to Gafford. Yeah, he just does it all, and I'm glad he's eating a lot more of Gordon Hayward's minutes. He plays extremely well. There again, yeah, like you said, they got a lot of guys coming off the bench that played extremely well. They did it all, man. They did it all. They just felt good. It looked like such a different team than round one, game one, where the lights may have been a little too bright or whatever was happening.
Yeah,
and this one. They're just ready.
Well, it's not really fair that they're the youngest team in the postseason and they had the longest time off. They had like a week off here after they swept the Pelicans.
They played like four games in 22 days.
That's
or something
what I'm saying.
Like that.
It's like, that's ridiculous. My goodness. So they looked ready to go. And, you know, look, Dallas stayed close. And there were parts where you're like, wow, when it got it to one, you're like, okay, again, Kyrie's going here. We've seen this story before in the postseason. This guy's like Mr. Second Half. But then, boom. Just a massive run to be like, take control of the game again. And yeah, SGA hitting those threes, he was feeling good. So the Mavericks are now 0-5 in game ones under Jason Kidd. I believe they're 1-6 for Luka in game ones. The good news is the Mavericks have been able to win three of their four series under Kidd entering this one when they lose that game one. They only lost to the Warriors in the 2022 Western Conference Finals. So you maybe are not panicking yet. If you're Dallas, you obviously want to get that split Friday night. Is that when they play? No, Thursday night.
Yeah.
But the whole Luka situation, like he's got to be the best player in the series. And I just wonder if he's going to be able to do that because of the defense they can throw at him and because of his knee. But he will be better in game two. Yeah. Probably the shots will fall, but he has to be. You're not going to win games when he's going for 19 points, and even Kyrie had somewhat of a quiet game outside that little stretch.
They combined for 39 points.
Yeah.
That's not enough. You need 39 from one of them.
Yeah, they rely on Luka and Kyrie. They don't have a third guy like OKC does. Quite honestly, like watching Shai and Jalen, okay, they look great, but Chet Holmgren was clearly the best offensive center in this series on both teams. He just looked great with his turnarounds. He looks super comfortable.
Hit a couple threes.
Blocking the snot out of a lot of shots in this one.
Yeah, 19 points, 7 boards, 3 blocks for Chet. And he had a couple nice dunks, right? He had one sort of, I think it was off of an offensive rebound. Then he screamed down the middle, got the pass. He had another big putback dunk. Gets the crowd going bonkers every time he throws down one. So really good game.
A couple of awesome blocks, too.
From OKC, anything else from this one?
Derrick Jones Jr. had a nice couple of dunks. He had a really nice tip dunk, but my favorite was the one when Kyrie Irving threw a lob to Derek Lively, but Lively didn't know it was him. Luckily, two Derricks back there.
Yeah.
Derrick Jones Jr. playing backup caught the alley-oop lob at about the dotted line. Yeah. Just took a dribble and dunked it. That was a weird play. Seemed like a baseball cutoff man.
Yeah.
The refereeing I didn't like at first. I saw a little Josh Green just grabbing the jersey of someone and them calling that a foul. Didn't like that. But then I saw Josh Green really body check Shea Gilgeous-Alexander on two consecutive spots where Shea was backing him up a little bit. So Josh didn't take it in the chest. He took it in the shoulder with a boom and a body check. One, body check two. Okay, we got to call that a foul. That can go on Sports Science. Trey tweeted a great clip of the Kevin Love running into a sumo wrestler.
Oh, yeah.
That's literally what Josh Green did to Shea Gilgeous-Alexander twice on the same possession. It was a hard hit. So I wrote down every Sports Science clip that could have been made from last night.
Oh, okay.
We saw Daniel Gafford, his head hitting the cushion on the bottom of the backboard after blocking Jalen Williams.
Nice.
Oh, that was awesome. The Jalen Williams laying off the top corner of the basket. I mean, that's far. Yeah. I can see the image of pulling out the meter stick or the tape measure, how far that was from the rim. That was a really far land. The Holmgren block on Kyrie's left-handed push shot, it ain't all that sexy for Sports Science, but to see a Kyrie left-handed push shot from the baseline, 10 feet away, and Chet Holmgren just blocking it looked cool. The Dort kickball that wasn't a kickball. I don't know. There's something there. That's probably about it. I got a contested drive top right. That's the Jalen Williams. Anyways, that's about it.
I'd maybe throw in Mark Daigneault's squinting. Now that you mentioned it, Skeets,
you cannot see it.
I cannot see it, man.
This guy squints more than Trey Kirby, man. Hey. You can't unsee it, though.
You can't unsee it.
You really can't.
Get this guy some sunglasses.
I almost wish I hadn't said anything, because that's all I think about every time they see
him. What are you looking at?
Yeah.
He says he's got great vision. That's what he said.
I've got such great vision, I don't even need you to open my eyes, barely. Yeah. All right, so good win from OKC. We'll see what happens on Thursday night is that game too there in OKC. I guess my final note, are you a fan of the way the Oklahoma City crowd split their free T-shirt colors?
Blue, white,
where it's
blue,
like
white,
a
blue,
block
whites.
Of blue and a block of white and a block of blue. You a fan of that? More fan of one uniformed color and how it looks on TV? What do you think? No problems?
The Thunder get such good buy-in by guilting their fans into putting on their shirts.
It's really amazing.
Yeah.
It's 99% of the people have the shirt on.
Well, I mean, you heard Tim Bontemps talking pregame. They literally put you on the Jumbotron with a sign that says, put on your shirt and everybody will boo you until you do it.
It's great.
It is.
I mean, that's a smart way to get people to put the T-shirt on. Just guilt trip them into wearing it.
Yeah.
It's you're not a real fan unless you throw it on.
And then they stand up until they hit a shot. Yeah, they're into it, man. They're into it.
I think Trae Young was at the game last night. I believe he was, but he was not wearing the T-shirt. Now, he plays for the Atlanta Hawks,
that's true.
So I understand
that's
that,
true.
But did they put him on the board and say, come on, put your T-shirt on?
They should try it, at least.
And, would they try it with, Jimmy Goldstein when he's there sitting baseline?
Imagine Jimmy Goldstein wearing a T-shirt. That doesn't make sense to me. Trae Young was probably a Thunder fan, though, right? Growing up.
For
he
sure.
would have been there during the Durant and Westbrook years.
I think he had a seat in the arena, from what I do remember. He was sitting on the in the upper area. Upper. He didn't have great seats. He's a good fan.
And do you think the Athletics own our good friend Andrew Schlecht, who you see right there with great seats, obviously, reporting on the game, so you want to remain unbiased as possible, but do you think even he's man, I should put the T-shirt on?
No, he was wearing a button-down, wasn't he?
I know. Yeah, sure.
He wanted to. That's got to be such a weird feeling for Schlecht. Your team is straight up balling right now. They look incredible. You're sitting courtside. And you can't enjoy it outwardly.
No one told Lee Ellis that when he went to a Raptors game back in the day. He's going banging on the wall. Let's go, Raptors! John Schumann's looking at him you're going to get us all fired, man.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City, with David, a sculptor, and his wife, Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful designed objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yermans and their son, Evan, continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and Cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yerman's collections are available on davidyerman.com.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, let's move over to the first game from last night. It was also a blowout. The Boston Celtics picked up in the second round where they left off in the first round as well. Big win. Jaylen Brown scored a team-high 32 points. Derek White added 25. And the Celtics notched their fourth win by 20-plus points in the postseason. So another ass kick in here. They hit 18 threes in the victory. But what'd you think of Game 1, Boston-Cleveland?
I thought the Celtics felt absolutely zero resistance in this game. J.B. Bix had a mic'd-up segment after the very first break in play. The first thing he says to his Cleveland Cavaliers in the timeout, "We're giving up exactly what we said we didn't want to give up." They gave up threes. Two threes on the very first two possessions. Everybody knows that's what the Celtics want to do. The only reason this was close at all is because the Celtics went 6 of 22 from three in the first half. In the second half, they went 12 of 24, and that's an easy win for the Celtics. 18 to 11 on the three-point board, and then they also won the rebounding battle, 55 to 38. This was domination from the Celtics. Derek White, I don't know if he's the third option on this team, but he feels like a first option. This was a guy costing the Celtics playoff series back in the day because he wouldn't shoot threes, couldn't shoot threes, and now he's knocking them down to the point where he's like on list with Steph, Clay, Damian Lillard for guys who hit 23s over five games or something like that. It also helps him, I think, that Darius Garland is his primary defender because they put Garland into every single pick and roll. Mm-hmm. And I think the Celtics scored every single time that Garland was involved. He can't guard against this team because everybody has size on Garland. And it's just like Jason Tatum didn't have to have a great game. He didn't really have a great game. Jaylen Brown did. Derek White did. And they smashed.
Yeah. Derek White's 28 three-pointers over a six-game span are the most in Celtics playoff history. And then you said, yeah, he's made 20 threes over the last three games. There you and go. You're getting on the list there of the Currys and the Clays. I think Jamal Murray has done it as well over a three-game span in the postseason. He can't miss right now. And you're right. I mean, that was 2022. It was like, oh, this guy might be hurting them. And now he's turned into Ray Allen, for crying out loud.
Crazy.
It is pretty wild. But yeah, this game never felt really all that close.
Yeah, Jaylen Brown was asked about Derek White after the game and said he's just getting started. So is he going to get better? I mean, he looks obviously great, but he can be the third option. It is hard to look at this team and say, who is the number three? It's either Kristaps Porzingis or it's Derek White. And Derek White, he was going at Garland. It was a little disappointing to see Darius Garland lack the ability to just move fast enough, to get in the way fast enough. But then Derek White just got confident taking contested threes. He just felt so good at whatever was in front of him. And whoever was there, he was going to shoot in front of him. It was cool to see the Celtics play like they could play against the Minnesota Timberwolves in the finals. Not looking ahead to it, but I am looking ahead to it. They were winning 50-50 balls, and that's what you got to do against the Minnesota Timberwolves. And the guys, I didn't mention when you mentioned Tatum and Brown and Derek White and Porzingis, the other guys like Drew, he's the guy who what he was signed for was doing that. He was scrapping, taking open threes. Derek White also was doing that. They were just ready to play. And I think they're probably fine with nobody talking about them, maybe because Miami won game two of their series. Everybody was really not putting Boston back into the finals. Like, they aren't in the headlines as much as they were during the regular season, but I think that's fine with them. They just come out everything is business. And it's unlikely that this is going to be much of a series just with all their freaking talent. They played hard most of the night and they could have easily blown them up by 30, like right from the get-go if they played even harder.
Yeah, they were missing threes in the first half. They were generating good looks, though. Okoro was hitting a lot of threes to sort of keep them around. You know, Donovan Mitchell did his part again, I thought, at least as much scoring as he could possibly do here over a three-game stretch now. But yeah, nobody else, especially Garland. I mean, Darius Garland right now, this guy was an all-star. He looks like, to me, I love this player, but it's going to come off as a bit of a diss. He looks like Mike Conley at this point of Mike Conley's career. Like, he looks like an old guy to me, the way he's playing. There's not a lot of juice to him, and he's getting exploited. And I guess he had moments in this one where he scored inside at least, and a couple little nice flip-ins around the net, but not enough. And this guy was at, we were like talking this guy, but I remember there was debate like, oh, who's going to be the real lead guard on this team now? Well, that's not a conversation at all. He's not that good right now.
He's Tyler Hero. He plays exactly like Tyler Hero right now. He can get hot. He can have some big shooting games, but he's given it all back on the other end and seems to just not know what to do right now. He seems completely lost, and maybe it's because this is clearly Donovan Mitchell is the lead guard, and it was, you know, he went out, how do I fit in? He just doesn't seem to bring anything consistently, and then the defense is just bad. It's bad. He's a target out there.
No, he's getting left behind. He's not as good as Mike Conley playing defense now.
Yeah.
Like, he's just slow, and Conley gets in front of the guy who's supposed to guard. But on the offensive end, maybe the next year they figure out what their pecking order is. Because
he'll probably be the number one guy.
Huh?
He'll be the number one guy next year.
Dono's gone?
Oh, yeah.
But he's signed.
Yep. Yeah. Trade him before he trade leaves. Him? Yeah.
You think this is the end of Donovan Mitchell here in Cleveland?
Yeah.
Where you got him going?
Miami.
Oh, geez. Here we go. Tyler Hero coming back.
Probably. Yeah. Double Tyler Hero.
What's better than one Tyler Hero?
Well, the Heat already have two. They got Terry Rozier.
That's right.
But it's weird. I mean, like, Garland, he is talented. He did make an all-star team, though I feel like he made an all-star team because it was in Cleveland that year.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah. He had a good year.
He had a good
and
year.
And he's had a
it
really
hasn't been this year.
Brutal year. And he had the broken jaw and all that and a lot of injuries. And you know, there are reasons, but it's shocking to see him this sort of playing this poorly over a long stretch here. This went back to a bit the end of the regular season into the postseason. Garland, Strus, and Caris LeVert gave the Celtics 23 points combined in game one. We said somebody's got to help out Mitchell if they have any chance to pull off a win here, make this a series, and really no one did outside of Okoro, who hit some threes, like I said, early, sort of cooled as the game went on.
Yeah. It is unfortunate. Both Garland, we're not even talking about Mobley on the offensive end. Those two guys have got to go into training camp and October, November, if they're still there, and learn how to play around Donovan Mitchell and then play together, because that didn't happen this year. Their great 2 months were without those two guys I mentioned in Garland and Mobley, so they got to figure something totally different out, because Garland just wasn't comfortable. Like, that first three, he was so short on. It was so flat, and then he did hit a couple buckets in transition and all that, but they were just, they weren't there. And even Mobley, he was not assertive enough. Like, there's
no, they brought it on the broadcast. Like, he's not even looking at the rim.
Yeah, on that offensive rebound, he's 3 feet away. When he got an offensive rebound, he should be dunking on Derek White, because that's who he got it over. And he passed it out. They're not right. And in a Celtics arena that I didn't think was all that loud, OKC's arena was way louder. I thought Celtics arena and fans were just kind of hum-ho. I mean, it was fine.
Yeah, Tim Bontemps, I think, called it like an early November game vibe.
It felt regular season-y.
It did.
Yeah,
it did. You know, look, they have the team, the fans, they got bigger plans than beating the Cavaliers in game one of a second-round series. But, I do go back to, like, Cleveland also asked for this matchup in a weird way, right? They wanted Orlando to win a first-round series, but that then put them on this side with the juggernaut Celtics. So this isn't really all that shocking, but no. I will give some love to...
It was not juggernaut shocking. It was
no.
not.
give some love to Boston's backup bigs, obviously getting a bit more of an opportunity with Porzingis out with injury. Luke Kornet, 12 points in his minutes.
Damn, those blocks. Those were nice.
10 boards, a couple blocks. He was really good. And then even we saw a little Xavier Tillman there, a little stretch, but he was effective. Obviously, getting some burn there with KP out, but this series is not going to be an issue not having KP. I don't think they can win a title without him, but this series, I believe they can.
I'd like to see him at least tested, before the finals.
Right.
It'd be cool to see the Celtics play a game that's tough.
Yeah, and in the conference finals, if they get the Knicks, so it sure feels like getting the Knicks. They could be a little bit tired going into Boston to play them.
Oh, yeah. Because
this is going to be a number one, should be a longer series for New York. and two, everybody's injured that we'll get to, and they're just playing all their guys at the top of their rotation a lot of minutes. So this could be an easy trip to the finals.
Yeah, to illustrate that point, I saw Ziller write, it's possible that the Celtics sort of star players will have played like 300 minutes by the time they get to the conference finals, where it's very likely the Knicks players, if it's a long series, will be at like 600 minutes. They'll have played like twice amount of minutes. It's in play if Boston takes care of business here and the Knicks like have a longer series and these guys continue to play 45 to 48 minutes. That's pretty crazy. And they're obviously banged up too. Yeah. One final thought on Derek White that I saw from CBS Sports that I think probably rings true here is if Boston does indeed go on to win a championship this season and they finally get over that hurdle, Derek White is clearly going to wind up being their version of what Aaron Gordon was to the Nuggets, what Andrew Wiggins was to the Warriors, what even Brook Lopez was to the Bucks. The idea of like this guy that you get for a fairly decent amount, not a lot is what I mean, like I think it was a pick and maybe a deep swap in the future for Derek White, but a guy that you get who has limitations but then unlocks them. And we saw that with Aaron Gordon, his movement off the ball, playing with Jokic, defensively Wiggins locking in, Brook Lopez too becoming an elite sort of rim protector. And Derek White, it's not the defense. That's what they knew they were getting. It's the idea that, again, this is like suddenly like this guy's the greatest three-point shooter ever. So yeah. I think there's a lot of truth to that. It's like finding that sort of that third guy, that fourth guy, whatever you want to call them, to unlock your team to maybe get you to the title.
Absolutely, yeah.
A lot of basketball still to go, though.
That from CBS Sports, and I heard you say that, and I said, I think I said that before. So I did a quick Google of my docs. Yep, I said that. After game four against Miami, he had that 27-point game. It looked exactly the same. And two big blocks. He plays defense. Like, he gets physical. He's a physical dude. He gets after it.
Can you name a single player that was traded for Derek White?
No.
No. I mean,
from Boss.
Do I have it right that it was a first-round pick and, like, I think a future swap?
First-round pick, and they do still owe a 2028 first-round pick. That one could really come back to bite him, you know?
You never know.
No, I don't know.
Who are the players?
Romeo Langford.
Oh, I know the name.
Josh Richardson.
Oh, I knew that.
The 2022 first rounder became Blake Wesley.
Holy moly.
Heisty. Spurs are like, fine with us. We got Wemby.
Yeah.
That's why we traded him.
Yeah,
well, they traded him right before they traded DeJounte Murray, right? Yeah. Well, that's when they decided our best two players, nah, we're done with them. It's an interesting move by the Spurs, but they wanted to get bad. And they did that. They did that very well.
Any other notes on Boston, Cleveland, game one?
I will just say I always love to see Donovan Mitchell do the Dwayne Wade like dribble down and then like the high pickup over. I love that. But Payne Pritchard just ate it. You don't see that happen. You don't usually see a guy. You always get to see guys stretching out their arms. If you have a Donovan Mitchell / Dwayne Wade dribble, it gets over the arms. But Payton Pritchard just gobbled it.
I was going to say, if you like that move, you're going to love it when he's in a Miami Heat uniform.
When he copies
it,
exactly.
Can't you see like the video sort of transition edit right now?
Yeah, I think they may have done that already.
I'm sure they have.
I think Dwayne Wade's production team has already done that, I think, because he sees himself in Donovan Mitchell for sure.
Yeah, Mitchell calls Wade his mentor. Wade bought part of the Jazz when Mitchell was there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's true. Didn't work out there.
All right, those are last night's blowouts. Let's get to some news. The big news from yesterday came fairly quickly because they have a big break between games 2 and 3, but the Nuggets guard, Jamal Murray, was fined $100,000 by the NBA. He did avoid suspension for throwing multiple objects in the direction of a game official during live play. That is what the league announced yesterday, and I was quoting them there on the throwing multiple objects part. Murray tossed a towel. He tossed a heat pack late in the second quarter, basically at Mark Davis, and you know, nothing happened. They sort of missed it. KCP quickly grabbed it, chucked it off, but $100K and no suspension. Sort of, we talked about this with Kirk Goldsberry on yesterday's pod. This is what we thought there would be a substantial fine, and he would probably be able to play in game 3, but any other thoughts on this?
It is funny that he threw a towel first.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even close to the court. It was a little short. It was on the in the baseline area, and then he decided, I got to throw something else through the heat pack. And I guess it wasn't technically directly at Mark Davis, although it sort of looked like that, because Mark Davis was asked about it after the game in the reporter pool, and he said, if we knew it came from the bench, we would have reviewed it under the hostile act trigger. And he would have got a tech because it wasn't thrown directly at someone. But if it was, he would have got ejected if they knew it was at someone, as he told our man, Dave McManaman. So that's, I guess he's needed a little more investigative work there for Mark Davis. Because it's like he knew, he looked around both times, but it wasn't like Adam. And he didn't know if it came from
Yeah, you don't know
fans.
Who threw it at first. And then you, well, I mean, it wouldn't take long to figure out that it was a player or at least someone on the coaching staff.
Yeah, they didn't review
had
it.
Had access to a heat pack, the truck.
We see video reviews all the time in games, but not for this one.
No.
They're just chilling for this one. And it didn't hit anybody, and nobody landed on it. So that, or else there probably could have been an ejection.
I guess the Nuggets got lucky here. I think that Murray isn't being suspended. If this happens in the regular season, he's probably going to be suspended. Though, you compare it to Dwayne Dedman freaking out against Eric Spoelstra, literally his own team. The Farragun goes on the floor. He was ejected. So maybe that's what would have happened. He did get suspended, but it was by the Miami Heat. Because they're like, see ya. You're out of here. Yeah. You're never playing for us again. And he didn't. But I bet if you ask the Timberwolves, and especially Anthony Edwards, they'd say, fine. We'd rather beat you full strength. Mm-hmm.
Possibly.
Yeah, the NBA is happy, I think, in this situation because they'd rather have the Nuggets have a key guy in Game 3.
Because, well, that's what people wonder. If this, if Denver was up 2-0, if the series was 1-1, does Jamal Murray, and the exact same thing happens, and he's frustrated. Look, he's throwing this crap because he's angry with Mark Davis. He's angry with the whistle. He's angry with everything going on out there. He's frustrated with his shots not falling. Would he have been suspended if it's a different series? I think it's fair to wonder. I don't know. We want these guys to play. So, and nothing happened in the end. You're right. It could have been bad. Cat could have slipped on it, I guess, and, you know, twisted a knee. Could have been very bad.
Yeah, again.
But nothing happens. That's good.
If it hits somebody or somebody steps on it, then he gets a suspension, in my eyes. And in this case, in this scenario, it doesn't make as many headlines. It's not as big.
You're saying he's lucky that his shot is so off right now that he didn't hit Mark Davis or anybody.
Yes, I heard.
Even throwing a heat pack.
I heard Tim Legler on ESPN say, it's no surprise that Jamal Murray missed Mark Davis because he is cold. I get it. Sure, but then I went back and watched everything that Jamal Murray was pissed about, every one of his shots. There was lots of physical play in yesterday's game, and, you know, he was upset about it.
Yeah, but they should have fought through. Temper tantrum.
No. And I think KCP was the guy who picked it up and walked off and was like, what the – man, what's going on? He was even upset. His teammate.
Yeah.
So that was weird. And I called it a free throw yesterday. I was wrong. It definitely wasn't.
It was during play.
A free throw. It was during play.
Yeah.
But it seemed like kind of dead time.
I think Towns was basically making a layup almost exactly when it happened, if I remember correctly.
Well, I thought he may have been throwing the heat pack because it looked like Karl Anthony Towns like double dribbled in a way, but it was hit by the Nuggets player. I thought that's what it was. I thought, that's a bad call, sir. But it wasn't.
Yesterday, I was calling it a heat pad. Today, I'm calling it a heat pack. How do you feel about that?
pack to me seems a little bit more transportable.
Okay.
Yeah. Pad, I don't know why it seems like you would plug it in.
I sort of agree with that.
I did see a great clip yesterday of Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce. It must have been while they were watching this game because they were talking about Mike Malone getting in the face of Mark Davis, and they're like, you got to be careful because Mark Davis will fight you.
I saw that clip as well.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, and they told a story about Rondo stepping to him once or saying something to him, and he was like, you want to...
Like, he just beat your ass.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy, man. They gave the Nuggets a long leash in that game two. It really felt like both Malone and Jamal Murray, they were begging for technicals. Like, please discipline us to try to get everybody else fired up. Yeah. And the refs, to their credit, were not taking the bait at all.
Like, nope.
I'll fight you in the summer. See you in the ring.
All right, so Jamal Murray, in theory, if he's good to go because of his injury or this lingering sort of shin splints and leg injury, he will be playing in Game 3, but the wallet's a little lighter there, $100K costume. You think it was $50K for each thing or $100K just for the heat pack? You think the towel dinged him at all?
Yeah, he said, that heat pad looks cheap. Get a heat pack. Here's $100K. I guess it was. I Googled, does Mark Davis fight? Is Mark Davis a fighter? Unfortunately, the Mike Tyson-Jake Paul fight came up.
Oh, okay. That's all
that, why did that come up? I don't get it.
All right, other piece of news here. This is big news here for a series in the Eastern Conference. Mitchell Robinson has a stress injury to his left ankle. He's now the third key player for New York that they're going to not have or lose during this playoff run. No Julius Randle to start. Bogdanovich, now Mitchell Robinson. The Knicks said Tuesday that Robinson would be evaluated again in 6 to 8 weeks, but that essentially rules him out no matter how far they really go in the postseason if they go to the finals and win the whole thing. Mitchell Robinson, man, this guy's cursed. Absolutely cursed. He cannot stay healthy.
Constantly banged up. This is the second time this season he's been ruled out for the season.
That's true.
Right? Like, yeah. They were looking for an injury dispensement or whatever it's called from the NBA earlier this year. But get your allergy meds ready. It's time for the big sneeze. Preston Chatua, next man up. Get in here. His energy, I think he can match Isaiah Jackson. They kind of play similar styles. He can run with the Pacers better than a healthy or than an unhealthy Mitch Robinson, because, man, this guy was limping up and down the court.
He looks so bad in game one.
So,
I was upset
so
we didn't
slow.
Bring it up. I mean, we didn't really need to because there was so much else going on, but he looked so heavy and so slow, and, yeah, I didn't trust it, obviously. Yeah.
Totally. But Achiuwa, he's not Mitchell Robinson on the glass, because only Andre Drummond is Mitchell Robinson on the offensive glass. But still, since getting to New York, Precious has a 13.3 offensive rebound percentage. That would be seventh among qualified players. So he still hits the glass.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's going to be going against a smaller guy off the bench in Isaiah Jackson as well. So I kind of think the Knicks can survive this. It's good to have a third center who can actually play. Because Mitchell Robinson used to start, and Isaiah Hartenstein was the backup guy. I don't think we're going to see Jericho Sims, but I guess he's an option as well. But Achiuwa's got to be the dude.
It's a good trade that they made with the Toronto Raptors for OG Anunoby and Precious Achiuwa. He comes in handy here for sure.
Yep.
It does, like, big picture, you look at the New York Knicks and you think, oh man, everybody is injured, and they play, I shouldn't say everybody is injured, their starters are all playing, but they play those guys lots of minutes, and then their backup guys go out. So you think, oh, this is bad, boy, I'm Bogdanovich out, Mitchell Robinson out. But I do think in this series, it's not a big issue because of who he's playing and Isaiah Jackson. I mean, Mitch, doesn't look good in game one. It didn't look good in round one, where he missed one game because of an ankle injury. He was limping around against Joel Embiid. He looked like he was extremely injured. And Isaiah Jackson is quicker than him. He's just faster. So it is Precious time, and Tibbs is going to finally use him. I mean, when that injury happened to Mitchell Robinson in round one, he was out one game against Joel Embiid. Precious came in and played 20 minutes, four blocks, seven boards.
That's good.
Only 1 point. A big 1 point, because he couldn't put the ball through the hoop, but I don't think that really matters. In this instance here with the Knicks, again, it's okay to have McBride and Precious Achiuwa as your two guys coming off the bench, and that's it. That's it. That's all Tibbs is going to bring up. There's a chance he looks at Alec Burks and says, maybe for a minute or two, but probably not. Shake Milton, no. Jericho Sims, unlikely.
Yeah, unless
that's who they're
trouble.
Going.
Yeah.
That's who they're going.
Mitchell Robinson took to Twitter after this news. He says, "This is so effed up, dog. Like, I don't even know what to say." He followed that up moments later with, "This is not over. I will seek revenge."
What?
He deleted that second post. Now, people are reading into it, of course, but is the revenge against Joel Embiid, who he maybe feels played a part in the ankle injury?
Ooh.
Right? It has to. Why would you delete it? And who's the revenge?
Didn't he pull on his right ankle?
Yeah.
He did pull on his right.
I know. So maybe that's why he's like, this is stupid. I'll delete this. But anyway, I feel bad for him. I definitely do feel bad for him, because I think this is now the fourth in-season procedure he's going to have had or undergone here since joining the Knicks in 2018. Like, he really just cannot stay healthy for a substantial amount of time. He was their starting center for the first 21 games. And then, you said it, Trey, ankle surgery. Misses the next 50. We didn't think we'd maybe see him at all for the rest of the year. He comes back. He doesn't look 100%, and then it's tweaked again here, the other ankle. And, man, it's bad. It's bad. And this guy was really good when he was playing. He was the top offensive rebounder, basically, in the league.
But it was a good Embiid stopper at times. But it is different against the Pacers, who just run with Turner and Isaiah Jackson.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Minnesota Timberwolves center Rudy Gobert is once again the NBA's Defensive Player of the Year. Rudy joins Hall of Fame centers Dikembe Mutombo and Ben Wallace as the only four-time winners. Gobert received 72 first place votes, so he sort of ran away with this one in the end. Victor Wembanyama, the rook, coming in second. Bam, third, and everybody freaking out that Sabonis got a vote for Defensive Player of the Year. Somebody out there really loves and respects the defensive rebound.
Defense isn't over until you get the
right,
board.
That's right. Sabonis leads the league in defensive rebounds. So somebody wanted to give him a little honor there. But yeah, Rudy, not surprisingly, Tass, I don't think anybody's shocked by this, ekes out, or not really ekes out, but wins his fourth here over Wemby. The Wemby says this will be the last one he ever wins. Rudy does. Wemby's going to win 5 to 10 straight.
For
now.
Sure.
Maybe, yeah.
Not surprising, but so much has changed as far as Rudy Gobert's personality, just his reputation over the last few years since he won it in 2021. We all wondered the last 2 years, is he getting a little slower? Can we estimate, do a little sports science on how he gets from the lane to the three-point line? Because he did look a little slower for the Utah Jazz. Can he guard that amount of space? But he's guarding everywhere, something that Dikembe and Ben Wallace didn't have to do in terms of guarding the three-point line as much. He guards everywhere, and that's clear. He's also on an incredible team that works for him, and he doesn't have to be an offensive player like he had to be a little bit more with the Utah Jazz. He just has made everybody's, the pecking order there just perfect, and he's helped out Karl Anthony Towns become a better player because he doesn't have to defend anything, and his teammates like him, which I don't think it was part of his reputation before. But
it was not.
People like him, and they like playing with him, and he's a very fit guy. I saw him with his shirt off recently. Extremely fit.
The Timberwolves had the best defensive rating. They allowed the fewest points per game. They held opponents to the lowest field goal percentage in the NBA. Gobert ranked, you know, near the tops in a lot of your defensive categories, even your defensive rebounds and blocks and all that good stuff that you want from a defensive guy. We thought Rudy might win this in his first year in Minnesota, and it didn't go well. And they sort of underwhelmed, and then so it just took a year. And obviously, this is always a team award. It is. And he's got incredible perimeter defenders now, unlike when he played for Utah. He was winning Defensive Player of the Year because it was like, holy crap, everybody gets by those guys out there, and then he's got to clean up their mess. Now he's got guys that are dogs out there on the perimeter, and this is how you have the best defense in the league.
I think the Timberwolves' perimeter defense is making his Utah Defensive Player of the Years look better now.
That's interesting.
You're like, one team was starting Joe Ingles. One team starts Jaden McDaniels, you know? Like,
yeah.
Think about what this guy was cleaning up playing for Utah, but this guy's having probably the best week ever. Right now, shout out to VH1. His son was born, skipped a playoff game, didn't matter. They're up 2-0, and now he's winning his fourth Defensive Player of the Year. Put him in the Hall of Fame already. He'll never forget this week.
You believe he's going in the Hall of Fame. I think I want to speak for you there.
I guess so.
He's got four.
How do you keep him out?
Yeah. If he gets a title this year, it's a damn lock, but I think he's in no matter what. Yeah,
Dikembe's
there. That's right. Yeah. And Ben Wallace is there, and... he's got four. Will he win another one? I think that's fun. That's fun. Or is this the last one? Is Wemby calling a shot here and saying, no, I'll be winning these for the next couple of years here. Or there'll be other guys that come up too, but we've never had a rookie win Defensive Player of the Year.
Right. Wemby's going to break this record. He will get more than four, I think.
Wow.
Guy got 19 votes for first place as a rookie on a terrible defense. Imagine when they put some decent players around him. He's maybe already the best defensive player in the league.
Right, right.
But the Timberwolves are a much better defense, though the Spurs played at a Timberwolves level when Wemby was on the court.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to do a quick little trivia off of Defensive Player of the Year? 10 guys total have won more than one DPOY. You guys already know the ones that have won four because we talked about it. It's Rudy, it's Dikembe, and it's Ben Wallace. So we've got... 7 other guys that have won more than two.
Dwight Howard.
He has 3. He's the only other one with 3 or more.
Draymond.
Draymond Green. No, sir. Oh, he has one.
Kawhi Leonard.
Kawhi Leonard has 2.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
I think of those two guys.
Sidney Moncrief.
Yeah, good
first
ones.
2.
I believe you're right.
Yeah.
Yep. He's got 2.
There's 10.
You got 4 more guys with 2. With 2.
Dennis Rodman.
There you go. Dennis Rodman.
Did Hakeem win?
Here you go. This nice award one. Is named after the man.
I did forget that.
Yeah, I know. So did I. So Hakeem Olajuwon has 2. And then you've got 2 more. Definitely gettable. You got to go to the 80s for one guy, and you got to go to the 90s for the other.
Basically. Michael Cooper?
No. Coop has 1, I think.
1, okay.
Yeah.
Who else was
big guys,
D-ing
big
up?
Guys.
Oh, yeah. Mark Eaton?
There you go. He's got 2.
Oh, the block guys.
Yeah.
And what you said that was the 80s one. What did you say the other era was?
It's 90s.
Okay.
I believe. He won both in the 90s.
Payton didn't do it more than once.
I'll double check that.
I think Alvin Robertson didn't do it more than once.
No.
David Robinson?
No.
No, I don't think so.
No.
Ewing, no. Man, this one is...
He went back-to-back late 90s.
This guy's stumperooning.
Yeah, this is good. This is a...
Late 90s? And it wasn't Hakeem or Dikembe. Who was in the middle there?
Oh, I guess he did win. Sorry, I want to correct myself. He won 99 and then 2000.
Okay, so. Okay, 2000.
So he won...
was I guess Alonzo that means he Mourning? Won...
Bingo!
Nice one.
The shortened season, I think he won the one of them. Yep. So you guys nailed it there. The guys to have won multiple Defensive Player of the Years. 10 in total, and Rudy's got 4. And yeah, probably Wemby will have 6 or 7. By the time he's done. Okay, final piece of news. Another member of the Memphis Grizzlies Core 4 is expected to receive an upcoming jersey retirement ceremony. According to the Commercial Appeal, the Grizzlies are planning to retire Tony Allen's jersey for next season. The Grindfather would be the 3rd Grizzlies player with a jersey in the rafters, joining Marc Gasol, who just had his, a month or so ago, and Zach Randolph, who already had his retired. Tony Allen. Going to be the next one from the grit and grind era Grizzlies to go up in the rafters. What do you think?
They call it the grind house. He's the grind father. You simply had to have Tony Allen's number hanging up there.
Gotta have it up there.
I was going back doing a little research. Apparently, in October of 2017, Tony Allen's first game back in Memphis, he was then on the New Orleans Pelicans. They said then they're going to do this. Took 7 years, I guess. But he deserves it. 6-time all defense, 3 times on the first team, 3 times on the second team. Kobe Bryant said, this is the best guy to ever guard me. Russell was going down a deep rabbit hole, because I swear there's a clip of Tony Allen playing defense with his hands behind his back. You know, like, I'm not following you. I'm just running chest mode against these guys. I couldn't track it down. So if you see it, send it to me, because I like that clip.
Six-time all-defensive team selection during the Grizzlies' grit and grind era. And yeah, they were going to retire his jersey during the 21-22 season with Randolph. But you remember Allen was like, hey, can you postpone the jersey retirement? Because he was caught up in like federal court in that weird multi-million dollar health insurance fraud scheme. Yeah, which I don't know whatever happened from that. But he was like, yeah, can you just hold off on this? So we'll get it next year here. Tony Allen, have maybe the whole band back together. Do you think they'll schedule it with Mike Conley in attendance?
Oh, yeah. Probably. For sure. Yeah. They did it for Marc Gasol. Right. That's when it was a day off for the Minnesota Timberwolves. Right. He got on a plane, got over there. But the four grit and grind guys will now have their jerseys retired because it's Zach Randolph, Marc Gasol, already been retired. Mike Conley will be.
Eventually.
100%. I like the Tony Allen addition here because with a lot of franchises, they wouldn't retire somebody like Tony Allen. Like a guy who, not an all-star, incredible defensive player, help your team out. A guy that will fight for your fan base. So, yes. I like it. It's an organizational type of thing. Some organizations would absolutely not do
this. Right, right. Yeah, they are celebrating literally that era by retiring the jerseys of all these guys. You know, Zach Randolph, Marc Gasol, better all-stars. Players, all-stars than Tony Allen, but that's what they're doing here. And you're right, when Conley eventually gets his retired too. I mean, they were so important to that city, and it was like they never won the championship, of course, but that was like an elite team for many, many years. And I like that we have these teams that even the ones that don't win a title should be celebrated, can be celebrated, especially just for their city and for their franchise. So congrats in advance to Tony Allen on the jersey retirement. You want to drive up and catch it?
I wasn't invited to Marc Gasol's for some reason.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm bitter. That would have been fun. Marc Gasol was great, and he gave a ton of credit to those three guys specifically. Mm-hmm. So now all four will be in there.
Yeah, I guess eventually. That was the first time they had all been back together in Memphis since they had like all parted ways, like way back. So they'll probably do it again. All right, let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Okay, this is a weird one. It's got a few parts here, but I found it too funny, so I had to go with it. We know Rudy Gobert just had his first baby. Congrats to Rudy Gobert.
Congrats.
That's why he missed game two that they won. So that's why Shams Charania tweeted, Timberwolves center Rudy Gobert out for game two versus the Nuggets. Gobert had birth of his first child. So that's when glue.guy had to Google. He said, hold on a second, let me think. Okay, so he misses a game here in May. I remember him saying he lost his virginity. He Googles it. On August 3rd, 2023, Rudy Gobert hits a three-pointer. He said, quote, I feel like I lost my virginity. Hitting a three made him feel like he lost his virginity. So that's when Glue Guy did a little bit more research. And 9 months ago to the day, almost to the day, very, very close, within a day, he then had his first baby. Interesting, says Glue Guy. Saturday, August 5th, 2023 is when he said it. 9 months later, thanks to Glue Guy and Gobert World, some great names here, they put it all together that, hey, maybe he conceived, along with his partner, their first baby on the day. Now, pregnancy doesn't work like that. All the time. It's not necessarily 9 months, but who the heck knows how it works? 9 to 10 months is the proximity. So here we go. It's 9 months basically to the day. So I classify that as funny enough. You get in to Tweet of the Night. That's good work.
That's great work.
And it's also all copy and pasted and glued in one screenshot. So I was happy to look at it rather than all around. Yeah, well put together.
I forgot about Rudy Gobert making three-pointers during the FIBA tournament. I did remember Anthony Edwards say, if he shoots a three in Minnesota, I'm walking off the court.
Yeah.
0 for 3 this season, Rudy Gobert from 3. Hasn't made one yet in his
NBA
career.
He's 0 for 17, in the regular season. He's 0 for 6 in Minnesota specifically, since he's been there. I looked it up. I was like, how many threes did Dikembe or Ben Wallace hit in their career? You want to take a stab at it? Dikembe. Let's do Dikembe first.
Zero?
He never made one. Yeah. How many do you think he attempted?
I mean, he played a lot of seasons.
Played a long time.
Very long
25.
Time.
25. One heave per season.
You are so high. You are way too high. Dikembe Mutombo, if you want to count the playoffs, which I will, in his career, 0 for 3.
Oh, my goodness.
Three attempts. That's all Dikembe. Now.
I bet those were at the end of a quarter,
probably,
too.
Probably. I would assume like, so. He's got to chuck it. Okay, Ben Wallace. I'm going to tell you right now, he has hit a three-pointer, but how many in his career?
Okay, okay.
How many in his regular season? Okay, he didn't hit one in the postseason. Okay. Regular season three-pointers for Ben Wallace, and attempts if you want to take a stab at it.
I absolutely do. 5 for 21.
Okay. Well, that'd be a great percentage.
Yeah.
Should have shot more.
Terrible percentage. Yeah.
No. Okay, but you said, five of, you want to change that then?
Yeah, 31.
Okay, 5 of 31. Take a crow at it.
3 of 28.
Okay, Ben Wallace in his very long career too, his Hall of Fame career, 7 for 51.
Wow, shooter,
14%, but had multiple seasons where he at least hit one. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 seasons where he hit one. Ben Wallace was a problem offensively.
He was a problem offensively.
For it works team. Both ways.
Yeah, I watch him on the Bulls a lot. Oh.
There you go. Ben Wallace hit 7. Rudy 0, at least in the NBA. And then Dikembe 0 for 3 if we count the playoffs. Yeah. That's wild.
I want to know how many times Ben Wallace had his left hand on the ball when he took those attempts, because he was really a one-hand chucker, like a one-hand shooter type of guy, because he shot it in close. I'm going to watch those three-pointers.
All right, you fire him up.
Shouldn't take long.
You fire him up, buddy. No. All right, we'll call it there. Look, one game on tonight. That's it. That's great, because Survivor's also on. So we're happy about that, the No Buffs team. But we have Game 2, Indiana and New York. It's 8 p.m. Eastern, so we'll be back tomorrow to talk about that. But because we only have one game, we might be light on news. We'll probably hit the beach tomorrow. So get your beach step-in questions in. You can drop them in the YouTube comments. You can tweet them in at NoDunksInc. That's INC on the end. Or you can email them NoDunks@TheAthletic.com. We'll probably put a post up there on our community page on YouTube as well if you want to drop them there. So we'll hit the beach, answer some of your questions. Anything goes. You want to make about the playoffs, about the awards, about next season, about the offseason, whatever. Get your questions in. We'll try and get to as many as possible. Till then, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, Ben Wallace hit some threes, and I was disrespectful of his shot form. It's all right. It was all right. Watching him here, I haven't found the Tony Allen behind the back thing yet, but it looked like form.
Well, I just saw him dunk.
Yeah, because now I'm watching the night of Ben Wallace's life. The hottest shooting night of Ben Wallace's life.
What did he
get? Started with a dunk. I don't know. I wonder
his career high. Did he have more 30 points? No way.
Probably not. Probably
41% career free throw shooter.
Wow. Hall of Famer.
Hall of Famer.
Because of the D, baby. All right. Brace the day, people.